Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, March 28, 2005. We are here for a discussion of Senate Bill 5519, which is the budget bill for the Land Use Board of Appeals. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5519. Mr. Glashan, can you set the stage?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, today you have in front of you a packet of material that's paper-clipped together, and the agenda is on top. And behind that, you'll find a document that has been prepared by the agency in response to some questions that came up during their phase one presentation. So they're prepared to talk about that document. And then behind that, you'll see a couple of memos from LFO, one just kind of giving you a reminder of what this agency does and who it serves and what the major policy and budget issues are and funding sources, that sort of thing. And then there's also a memo that details LFO's recommendations for the work session, and we won't discuss that until the work session. There's also a document that's been prepared by Lisa Pearson of the Budget Management Division, and she'll be going over that, walking you through the development of the governor's recommended budget for this agency for 2005-07.
Thank you. Let me call the agency forward. Lisa, do you want to come forward also? We have a document that you submitted to answer questions that were brought forward during previous discussions about the agency. And probably a good place to start would be to just have you kind of walk us through the questions that were raised and the answers to them.
Good morning, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. I will point out, too, I handed out a note.
For the record.
I'm Mike Holston, Board Chair of the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Thank you.
During phase one, I handed out a document. I brought a couple of extra copies in case members of the committee don't have the copies of the documents handy. You've been provided a document that responds to some questions that were raised at our phase one hearing. I've listed the questions as I understood them on the second page of that document. Those questions were, what kinds of local decisions are being appealed to LUBA? How does LUBA resolve those appeals? Do we affirm the decision, remand the decision, or reverse the decision, or the percentages? What kinds of persons are appealing decisions to LUBA? Are the petitioners persons who are adversely affected by the decision? Do they have a personal stake in the matter? Are they people that might not have a personal stake in the matter? And then finally, the performance measure tables needed to be updated. We turn to what's listed at the bottom is page one of the document. That table, well, first of all, what I did to respond to those questions, some of this information is readily available. Some of this information is difficult or impossible to find. What I did was I went through the last published volume of our opinions, and that covers a set period of time. That gives me pretty good information about who was involved in those appeals, what the nature of the decision was, and it tells me how we resolved the appeal. These cases were recently enough decided, so I have some personal recollection. You'd be surprised how fast we forget these cases once they're out the door, but I do have some remembrance of these cases. That helped me figure out whether these people, the petitioners, were likely to be people who were adversely affected by the decision and would have standing under a higher standing standard. So that's where I got the information from. And if you look at the cases that we decided during that period of time, this is how they break down. With seven of them involve subdivisions. I won't read through the whole table, but you can see there how they shook out. I would say that this is fairly typical. There would be some changes in the percentages of kinds of decisions, but I would say that volume 47 is probably fairly typical. One exception might be that I would expect to see more non-farm dwelling cases than showed up in this particular volume. But that's the breakdown of the types of opinions. I'm going to go through as many of these appeals and talk about them very briefly if you'd like me to do today. So I won't say anything more about the types of decisions that were appealed at this point.
Are any of the members particularly interested in any of the appeals that are listed?
Just a comment. Liver was created to relieve the pressure off the circuit courts, as I recall. 35 cases doesn't seem like that's a lot of pressure. And I might be wrong, but I just haven't thought of anything.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates?
Along the same line, what period of time were these 35 appeals over?
These were between, Madam Chair, Senator Bates, these were between May 2004, September 2004. I tried to indicate in that footnote at the bottom. I should have put it in the chat.
No, I missed that. I'm sorry.
These include only the cases that for which we issued final opinions on the merits. There were a number of other cases that were resolved by other means that won't show up in this volume. And what this volume doesn't show you as well is that we issue lots of interlocutory orders, so those won't show up here either.
See, there's 220 appeals this year, expecting 260 appeals. Am I reading this right in Appendix B?
So there was 35 cases and 23 additional cases that were resolved without actually going into the hearing process. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have at hand with me right now the number of cases that were resolved by unpublished opinions. My guess is that they would be more than 35, but that would just be a guess.
But just during this five-month period?
Madam Chair, I didn't notice the name on footnote 1 at the bottom of page 1. That's correct. So it would be during this period of time, there were 23 additional appeals, so 23 plus 35.
So that was 58 cases that you actually disposed of in 5 months.
During that five-month period, correct.
Okay. So you could double that and be in the ballpark for a year, and then double that number and be in the ballpark for a biennium on the number of cases that you're dealing with.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you could... would normally think that might work out, but this, you know, this particular period of 58, I didn't come armed with all the statistics, but the number of opinions that we issue varies fairly significantly from quarter to quarter, month to month. And I'm guessing from this point, if that's the number, then this was probably a fairly low number of period for final opinions and orders.
Chair, Appendix D does say that they handle 220 appeals per year. And you're thinking that as economy increases or improves, it's going to go up to 260. That's in Appendix D. If I'm in the right place, isn't it? Under future challenges.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the Appendix B has some numbers at the bottom. During calendar year 2004, there were a total of 224 appeals filed. It was either 224 or 223 filed. That 220 estimate is an approximation of that number.
Okay.
The 260 appeals represents the historic high number of appeals. Those are the number of appeals we got during the mid-1990s during the booming economic crisis. And I think what this paragraph indicates is that if we approach those booming economic times again, that's the kind of numbers we would expect to see.
Is Measure 37 having any impact?
That's my next question.
Okay. Could you discuss the impacts that you think Measure 37 is going to have on the agency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in this document that we brought at the phase one hearing, if you will turn to page 10, you can follow along with what I'm going to be saying. At this point, ballot measure 37 is kind of a huge unknown for us. The proposed budget does not include any additional funds in anticipation of an increase in number of cases by virtue of measure 37. Measure 37, in the text of Measure 37, indicates that decisions made under Measure 37 are not land use decisions. The significance of that for LUBA is that litigation, the initial litigation over claims filed, would likely occur in circuit court via writ of review, most likely. As I explained during the phase one hearing, our thinking about the ultimate long-term impact of Measure 37 is a lot harder to get your arms around, because if, as most people expect, if Measure 37 continues as it's currently has been approved by the voters, very few local governments are going to be writing checks. They're going to be waiving land use regulations. As they waive those land use regulations, one potential complication that we see is in determining what, if any, land use regulations are left after some, but not all, of those land use regulations are waived. If we get lots of those kinds of cases, it's our view that, it's our anticipation that those could be relatively complicated cases, and we could be getting a fairly large number of them. If that happens, then we likely are going to be in trouble by the law.
You'll be back. I'm fine.
Follow-up, Senator Bates?
Yeah, Madam Chair. I just want to get a couple things on the record that I'm concerned about here, but not concerned enough to stop this bill from going forward. We need to move this today, as you know and I know. I'm concerned about your workload in the near future, and as things ramp up in the state, thank goodness, to an improving economy, and I'm worried about the issues you just brought up with ballot measure 37, because I share the same concerns. I remember that from our previous discussion. You've got a very small budget. It's mainly general fund. The fees you charge per case, I think, are about $175 a case or something. I can't remember the numbers now. I think it's $175. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that was adjusted not too long ago in the last couple of sessions. But in the future, we may want to look at some of these organizations having a moderate increase in their fee schedule to balance out our general fund issues sometimes. Having said that, I don't want people prevented from going to LUBA because of that either. We've seen counties in the state for ballot measure 37 having huge fees to prevent people from getting their day in court. And we've also seen a situation in my county where there's no fee at all. There's going to be extra cost to the taxpayers for that. So some balance between the two might be necessary in the future. With that caveat, I have no difficulty with this bill.
I don't clearly see the link between Measure 37 and LUBA. I think, from my understanding of Measure 37, the appeal is into the circuit court system and there to the Court of Appeals. So can you talk a little bit more in detail about how LUBA will be involved in this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the point you just made is absolutely correct. The initial decisions under Measure 37, and it's relatively clear under the measure that actions taken under Measure 37 by cities and counties are not land use decisions. And the significance of that, everyone believes, is that any appeals of initial decisions to, say, waive a regulation, if someone wants to challenge that decision, that challenge would have to be filed in circuit court. It would not come to LUBA. So I there are very few people, I think, that question that aspect of Measure 37. The aspect of Measure 37 down the road that I was talking about just a moment ago kicks in when that has already happened. When someone has filed a claim with the city or county, a land use regulation has been waived. Let's say that property owner purchased the property in 1985. and they asked for a regulation that was applied to them after 1985 be waived. And the local government does that. But let's say that if there were still land use regulations in effect on 1985 that have not been waived. So the question becomes, if that person now, with the waived regulation removed, wants to develop their property, what are the rules of the game? And it's that in that circumstance, potentially, where old regulations that were replaced by the regulations that have been waived may well have to still be addressed. I'm talking about legal issues now that have not been fully resolved, but we're anticipating that this is at least one area where there is going to be some litigation at LUBA to find out what of those old regulations apply, and if they apply, have they been satisfied by whoever owns the property and wants to develop it.
Let me just clarify here, because I'm not quite getting this. So what you're saying is that if there is a Measure 37 claim on a piece of property, and that claim is adjudicated either through the DLCD or through the court process, then at some future point in time, that landowner or whoever owns the land subsequent to that owner owning it could come in, and there could be some question around other areas that were in other areas of regulation or this particular area of regulation.
Madam Chair, members of this committee, let me try to let's maybe throw out a hypothetical that might make it a little closer.
That would be helpful.
Let's say when I bought my property, a commercial development on that property was a conditional use. And I would have to go through and demonstrate that I met some standards that would mitigate impacts on neighbors, but it was a use that I could hope to get approval for and construct. Let's say sometime after 1985, a new law comes into effect, and now I can no longer construct a commercial development on that property. It's prohibited for some reason. The zoning change. It's now zoned residential. I could potentially file, if I meet all the other requirements under Measure 37, I could say, I want you to waive that law that made my property zoned residential and effectively prohibited me from constructing a commercial development. The local government looks at it and waives that regulation. Now, I'm not trying to say I know the answer to this question necessarily at this point, but I know this question is going to be coming to us. The question would be, in that circumstance, is that property owner now back in the shoes they were standing in 1980 or 85, whatever number I used, and now I can receive approval for my commercial development if I meet those conditional use standards? So that's the kind of peeling off of regulations, but then discovering that there are other regulations that may have been in effect when I bought my property that may continue to apply. Then decisions about whether I meet those standards would be run-of-the-mill land use decisions appealable to LUBA.
And that's what I thought he was going to do. Because what might happen in that hypothetical case, if I understand it properly, let's say that property owner then says, I've got a conditional use permit that was there when I bought the land. I knew it was there, and now I want to build on that basis. And let's say it's inside the city, and the city says, no, we're not going to give you that conditional use permit. We don't think it's appropriate, even though you beat us on 37. Then he might appeal to LUBA. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I'm not sure I understood your hypothetical, but that's if I had a conditional use permit at one point in time, and then the zoning changed for some reason,
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I mean, maybe I misunderstand what LUBA does, but what I've seen it do is there will be a landowner or a developer will go to the city or county wanting to do something, and they don't agree with the decision from the city or county. And they have a right to go several different directions on that. One of those directions is they can go to you for a hearing and a decision. And I think what you're saying, when you peel off 37 stuff, there might be things that the previous law and what was passed that changed things is no longer in effect. What's left there is where they were when they bought the land. That might be open to some interpretations at times. And that's where you might get re-involved.
Madam Chair,
I'm having real trouble seeing any clear impact here at all. I think this is all pretty clear. Theoretical, and it would seem to me that the language in 37 is clear that these are not land use planning issues, that these are legal issues, And so pulling anything in that venue into LUBA for some kind of a judgment would seem to be a stretch to me. I mean, I can see that there would conceivably be some situations where that would make sense, but that it seems to me that that's one of the areas around the measure that has a great deal of clarity to it, unlike some other aspects of it, and that the number of times that LUBA got involved would not, it would be few and far between compared to the number of times that the court system would be involved in it.
Wade in. First of all, I have two questions, if it's okay. Affirm means you went with the local government's decision. Remand means you sent it back to them so that the applicant can possibly work with them and come up with some agreement. But you reversed one in here. That means you did you grant them their permit that they asked for? Did you take over the local government's ability to grant a permit? Am I reading that correct? Number 32, Safeway, Inc. v. City of North Bend. When you reverse the decision, do you then outright grant the permit for gasoline station? Is that one of your, one of the things you do?
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, the Safeway, Inc. case versus Safeway, Inc. versus City of North Bend, and for the rest of the committee members, that's on page 4, it's item 32 on the list. What was involved in that case was we had an earlier appeal in which Safeway prevailed in a, I'm not going to be able to remember the precise posture of the case, but the end result in that prior appeal was that Safeway was awarded a discretionary land use approval. I believe the city had granted it in that case, and there was someone else challenging it. So they had their discretionary land use approval in hand. This case, and this is a case that was brought, the opponent, Safeway's opponent in this case was a neighboring gasoline dealer. The opponent appealed a denial of it. It was a building permit-like decision. It was a development permit based on that prior discretionary approval. And the city had turned it down. Safeway appealed that, and this is, it's fairly rare, but in this case it was clear to us that the development permit was precisely what they had approved in the prior discretionary approval, and we reversed the city's decision to deny the permit.
And then the second, just so I get this clear too, okay, the land use before a certain date was X, and then there were some changes in the land, and somebody bought it under X. And then there were changes in the land use laws, which would make it what the land use laws Y. Then 37 comes along. I go, I want to build under X. I go in and I file my Measure 37 claim. They say, you're right, you don't have to build under Y, you can build under X. Now I'm under X land use law. I go into the city, government, or county, apply for my building permit. They find, and that was all done in the court, they give me a permit, but under conditions that I don't feel really meet, that are less than what X allowed me to do. Then I would come to LUBA, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Shuffle, that's exactly
right. I'm squared away on it then.
Why would
Jeez.
You not go to the court system?
He did. Under Y, he went to the court system to get the waive, because they weren't going to waive Y. Went to 37. That the court said, yes, you do deserve X. So that got rid of Y. Then the local government said, well, we're not going to give you all that X says. Then they would go and appeal to LUBA after they'd already went through the court system. So I could see that happening, theoretically. It's confusing, believe me.
I'm going to take, Madam Chair, I've done a horrible job, and let me take one more crack at this. We have property owners out there that have owned their property since before there were any land use regulations. Those are the easy cases. If they file a Measure 37 claim and they say, we want you to waive them all, and they waive them all, then LUBA's not going to get involved with those folks because all land use regulations have been waived. So if they come in and start trying to do development, it's going to be strictly a matter between them and the local government and circuit court to get to build whatever they want to build on the property. And it's unlikely that there's going to be anything that would prevent them from building whatever they want to build. the harder cases are going to come in when people have valid Measure 37 claims, but they bought their property during times when there were some land use regulations already in effect. It's just that they've gotten more strict over recent years, and they want to get rid of the strict approval. And they would go to circuit court, or they would file their Measure 37 claim, and those lately adopted regulations, and Representative Schaffer's example, the
Y.
Category Y regulations would go away. But you're still left with X. And where this could get potentially complicated for LUBA is, let's say you've got a requirement for a review by a review body that doesn't exist anymore. We're going to run into those kinds of problems. It's going to be old laws that people have been applying for a while. We have no idea whether this is going to be a significant problem, but it could be. And that was our purpose in bringing it to the committee's attention.
So what I hear you say, then, is that LUBA could conceivably be in a position of adjudicating between conditions that were in place during the time when the land was originally bought by someone that may be conflicting, but were nonetheless, when you roll the planning laws back to that point in time, if it was that point in time, there would be things that could conceivably have come before LUBA to be adjudicated.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly it. And one of the difficulties is going to be in figuring out what those laws were in 1995. Some cities and counties are very good about keeping up with the way they codify the regulations. Others are not so good. So it may be very next to impossible in some cases to figure out what the law was in 1985 or 80.
Yeah, I can see
all these things. This is academic discussion, and we're kind of wasting time. We probably should move the bill, but this agency came into place as a result of a 1979 law, I believe, or 79, I think, was the year startup. What about any land use planning that was existing prior to 79? Would you necessarily have jurisdiction over that? Potentially, there might be an argument that you don't, which will put it back in the courts again. So I'm not going to go there. This time it gets very complex very quickly. And, but, Madam Chair, I think that the time may see anything coming through from ballot measure 37. I'm hoping it's going to be a year, year and a half, maybe even 2 years, and we'll have a chance to deal with that when the legislature meets again,
or the
e-board of apps.
There also is the e-board, too.
So I don't see any reason to hold this up, but just to get on the record that there's a potential, I think, is worthwhile. And the leap there, I think, is appropriate.
No, I appreciate that. Are there any more questions about the answers to the committee members' questions that are brought forward by the clerk? Then let's move forward and have Ms. Pearson go through the DAS recommendation.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. You should have a document that looks like this in front of you, and I'll be working from that document. If you turn to the second page, you'll find a graph.
Oh, I'm sorry. You need to identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Lisa Pearson. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services.
We all know who you are.
It's just that I've been rehearsing it so much in my mind beforehand, I thought I'd already said it. The pie chart you find on page 2 is a snapshot of the agencies within the natural resources policy area. The left-hand graph shows total funds, and the right-hand graph shows the general fund and lottery funds. For your information, the general fund and lottery funds in this policy area is only about 2% of the statewide total, and the total funds is only about 3% of the statewide total funds. If you take away the lottery funds, the general fund is only about 1.1% of the state general fund in the governor's recommended budget. And the lottery funds are most of it, except for $34,000 in agriculture or Measure 66 dedicated funds. They're not fungible. They can't really be moved over to another policy area. On page 3, the governor did go through a principal's budget in preparing his budget this time around. And this agency's budget is entirely within the economic development principle because of the original purpose, which was to avoid inefficient court kinds of procedures and try and provide an avenue for a more efficient way of dealing with issues. On page 4, you'll find the pie chart showing that this agency expenditures are 95% general fund and 5% other funds. The other funds come from publications, subscriptions, and the good news here is that it looks like there are more folks subscribing. So, and publication costs have gone down, so the actual revenue is expected to increase in the next biennium. And that, we will talk about in a moment, has some beneficial effects for the budget. The fifth page shows that this agency only has one program unit, but we included it to get you used to the idea of seeing this particular graph. Page number 6 shows how the budget is broken out between the expenditure categories. This agency is primarily personal services. There are the three board members, and then there are also staff that support their functions, including the staff attorney. On page 7, you'll find some historical information. Going back to the 1999-2001 actuals. And, of course, the governor's recommended budget is also listed there. And over time, there was a reduction of a position. There were some changes during the special sessions. However, in 2003, the legislature did restore some of those reductions. And so the agency has been able to keep up with its workload without trouble. On page 8, you'll find the major policy issues slide. For this particular agency, there isn't a lot of material here. We did talk about Measure 37 just a moment ago. The governor didn't address it either by giving more resource or taking resource away. And there are two reasons. One is that it's so uncertain, as you just discussed, that it would not be prudent at this time to actually make a substantial change. And then the second thing was that in keeping with the governor's desire to promote economic development, and because the original purpose was to try and provide that more efficient avenue, we didn't do anything differently with this budget from what would normally have happened. It's basically just continuing existing services. There are no fee or revenue issues for this budget. There are no technical adjustments. And there is a reduction. And this goes back to the fee revenue, or not the fee revenue, excuse me, publications revenue. And getting more publications revenue, we found that we could, in fact, shift the paralegal position from about 75% general fund and 25% other funds. We were aiming to get it to 65% general funds and 35% other funds, saving the general fund about $10,000. And then there were also the publication costs decreased, and that saved about $9,000. And with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions? Senator Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does DOS have any opinion on the fee schedule that's being charged to applicants to LUBA?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, no, we did not take a look at that. This was a very simple budget from our end.
Any questions? Thank you.
Let's move on, and Ms. McGlashan, can you just, we better close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5519, open a work session on Senate Bill 5919. Ms. McGlashan, can you take us through the LFO recommendations?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, as I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of documents that I've handed out from LFO on our Legislative Fiscal Office letterhead. And I'll just draw your attention briefly to the single sheet of paper, not the one that staples together, but the single one. It's just an overview for you that we're doing for agencies for Phase 2, and I won't spend a lot of time on any of these items because you've heard it all before. I would just point out that this agency from last session didn't have any budget notes. They didn't appear before the emergency board during the interim, and there were no audits, so there are no issues to discuss there. And with that, I'd like to move on to the stapled document. And what you have in that packet of information is a cover memo from LFO, and I'll walk you through that. There's a spreadsheet that is from our new Orbitz budgeting system, so we're using this for the first time, and you'll be seeing more of these as the session goes on and you get into work sessions on agencies, so this will give you a chance to get a little bit familiar with what you'll be seeing from here on out. And then we also need to have a discussion on performance measures, so there is a document pertaining to those as well, and I'll walk you through that. So if you'll turn back to the memo, that first item is just a summary of data and actually something that Lisa just covered in her presentation. The only difference is on the right-hand side, you'll see that there's a column for the LFO recommended budget. And that just gives you a chance to compare what LFO is recommending compared to the governor's budget and then some historical data for the agency. And the governor's budget is about a 7.4% increase in total funds over the 03-05 legislatively approved budget. The LFO recommended budget is a 6.8% increase over the 03-05 legislatively approved budget and a 0.5 decrease from the governor's budget. And I'll tell you why that is now. If you move to item two, you'll see that there are two adjustments that LFO is recommending. The first one happens to pertain to package 090, and if you'll turn to the spreadsheet, it'll give you the detail as to what's in that package and then what the LFO recommended changes are. And kind of in the middle of the page under work session actions, you'll see that package described. And as Lisa mentioned earlier, there's a shift from general fund to other funds for support of the paralegal position, and there's also a reduction in other funds because of lower publications costs, and there's also a reduction in general fund for the Smart Buy program savings, which is centralized purchasing effort that's being made, allowing agencies to save money in certain categories of expenditures. What LFO is recommending is, as Lisa mentioned earlier, the intention was to achieve a 65% general fund and 35% other fund split in the funding sources for the position. And what this recommended change does is achieve that split. It wasn't quite at that 65-35 split in the governor's budget. So this is something that we just consider a technical adjustment. It would allow there to be an adequate enough ending other funds balance to cover the publications costs for the 0507 biennium, as well as any possible personal services cost increases from negotiations that haven't yet been settled. And Madam Chair, I guess what I would ask you now is if you want me to go on to the next adjustment or if you wanted to take a
Are there any questions on package 090? Are there any objections to package 090? Can I just say without objection, the package is adopted? That just makes it official.
Thank you, Chair. The next adjustment would be package 801. And this is called the LFO Analyst Adjustments Package. And this is for the PERS adjustment. I'm sure you're all aware of the decision that was made in February by the PERS Board for a 14.63% PERS rate for the 0507 biennium. And the governor's budget was built using a 15.52% rate. And so this simply reduces the budget in recognition of that slightly lower rate. And it would reduce the general fund support by $6,909 and the other fund support by $219. And those are the only two adjustments for the budget. And if you turn the page over, you'll simply see the total recommended budget. And
then we want to do an adoption on this package.
Certainly, Madam Chair.
Do the members have any questions on package 801? Anybody have any objections to adopting this package? Without objection, the package is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, again, if you'll turn over the page, You'll see that the final budget amount for the agency would be $1,286,909 general fund, $64,694 other funds, for a total of $1,351,603 and six positions and six FTE. So the next recommendation I have for the subcommittee, you'll see back in your memo, item 2B, is that you approve a motion to amend Senate Bill 5519 as follows. If you happen to have the bill in front of you, you'll see these numbers that I'm referring to. If not, I guess you can go on faith. In line 6, there is an amount of $1,790,791. I'm recommending that that be deleted, and inserted in its place is $1,286,909. That's for the general fund. And then in line 7, delete $67,940 other funds, and insert $64,694.
Does anyone have any discussions around the recommendation? Senator Nelson?
I'm just so choked up about this.
Excitement never ends. It's not going to the floor, so don't get too excited.
I guess, you know, the thing that struck me in all this was the fact that, you know, we've been sort of told in all the other agencies in the original budget process that we might actually be making some difficult choices. Okay, say that I want to fund Oregon Project Independence, for instance, and it costs $1.5 million to do that. I don't know those make up figures.
$15 million.
Okay. Well, whatever it is, say I'm trying to find something I want to find, 1.5 I think is more important. I mean, from my viewpoint, we've got 14 agencies here that, you know, if you took $100,000 by any much one of them, you'd have $1.4 million. And so what I'm saying is I might pick another agency. I might pick someplace else that I would like to spend $100,000 of their budget and put it in someplace else. I mean, I hadn't thought about it until I started looking at this thing, that this was the way. I mean, I want to move this bill out, but at least the instructions I remember was, you know, pick those things that you put in a priority or that are necessary versus what is nice. And I just think there might be something in there that I might think is more necessary, and maybe somebody else would agree with me, and I don't know. Is that part of our process? Is that how we're supposed to be doing this? Or?
But I think that the balancer to the point that you're raising, I think it's a very valid point in that you have no context to judge the value of this budget against other budgets, is to consider the importance of the program from the point of view of economic development in the state, and that this doesn't increase at all. I mean, it does slightly increase the funding of the agency over last biennium simply to take into account the increase in costs. It doesn't increase services, and it, in fact, reduces some costs by being able to shift some of them into the publications, the money that the agency generates. But if we choose to take money out of this program, because it's such a small, discrete, skinny budget to begin with, taking very much money out of it is going to cripple the program and not allow a function, a LUBA function, to take place in the way that it's taking place. And we've worked, I think, over several bienniums with the agency, and the agency's been very good about trying to right-size it so that it fits the flow of cases that go through. And people out there in Oregon that are trying to do things on the land don't get hung up in the process beyond what's reasonable and what's statutorily authorized. So I think that's the balancer, is that we also have a responsibility to make sure that the people that need to use this agency have an agency that's going to function reasonably for them.
Not sure. co-chair's budget's out fourth or fifth, something.
Yes.
And at that time, you, chair of this committee, will be given your marching orders, and you'll be giving us our marching orders as to, out of the rest of the budgets, the amount of dollars we got to find. Is that fair to say that?
What?
That we would have to find this number of general fund dollars to try to save to cover other programs, or we'd be giving our marching orders. So in other words, as to what we're going to be allowed to spend within the agencies.
We will get. My understanding is, by agency, what we are supposed to spend. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. What Senator Nelson was talking about, that those actions. Isn't that what full Ways and Means can do, possibly? I mean, we're kind of limited here in the subcommittee what we can do, aren't we?
I think that in the subcommittee, we have the ability to accept the LFO recommendation or move forward or make a decision to change the LFO recommendation, and if we can agree, move forward.
I guess what I'm asking is, I understand we can do that, but if someone wanted to take $100,000 out of a budget, and I'm just on the subcommittee, and I'm not on full, and I'm certainly not a co-chair, there's no guarantee where I want to put that $100,000 is going to go there, unless, of course, we take it out of this budget, and I'm just talking generality, so don't get scared, out of budget A that we see at this subcommittee and put it into sub B. Budget B, I imagine we can do that here, but if we want to take something out of this, any of our budgets we're going to see in this committee and put it in Project Independence, there's no guarantee that's going to happen. That would have to happen at either the full or at their subcommittee somehow.
Department of Human Resources.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no guarantee. If we cut something out of this budget, there's no guarantee it's going to go where we want it to go. That's my question.
I don't think we can direct the money.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
We can have a good time now.
I think that without the... we could not move money from this budget anywhere else.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
First, I want to thank you for bringing a small, discrete budget out for us to. Well, it's important for us to look at, because the issues we're talking about are going to be more important in other budgets we look at, and more important either in the committees we look at. So don't take anything I'm going to say directly to you at all. We're passing this budget out, okay? The issues here are the ones we've heard about. Do we want to reduce an agency to the point it can't function anymore? Some big agencies can take a hit much easier than other agencies can, so we have to reduce their funding. They can continue, and these small ones really would be maybe potentially non-functional, and certain programs might become non-functional if we got there. Secondly, we didn't discuss, and I'm not going to discuss, your fee schedule. It's 10 years old. We'll be 10 years old by the time we get this budget finished. In 2007, we need to look at that fee schedule or how it affected. You think we change it or wanted to change it? Is it appropriate or inappropriate? We may be looking at that in other budgets, and all those issues will be boiling up. But to walk through this budget this way, I think, is actually gives us a feel for it. And we are going to be taking marching orders, and I'm hoping when those marching orders come, we'll be marching together, because I will be taking my marching orders from someone different than you potentially will. We've got to march together out of here, okay?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, Representative Frank.
And I appreciate the Senator's point. The issue, though, the process issue about if we feel that there's inappropriate spending or that spending can be trimmed in any agency, is something that we as committee members should be talking with the chair about before we come in here to vote on the bill. Now, I think this is the genius behind the process that we've engaged in, because we've had lots of opportunities to have agency people in front of us, and we've had lots of opportunity to look at budgets and really flesh out how spending is being done, and that's our opportunity at that point to come to the chair of the committee and say, hey, I think you should consider maybe reducing this here or maybe adding something there, because it works both ways. And then let her take that to the co-chairs, and if she concurs with it, or maybe build consensus amongst committee members if she thinks that's a wise idea, And if we as a committee think, if her consensus is that she thinks this is something we think we ought to do, then she can blend that in with the co-chairs and let them sort of add that into their overall picture of things and come up with a good direction that's workable for all.
Well, and I also think committee members, and again, big picture stuff here, so bear with us as we work this through. You just have maybe your first ones out of the gate here, that we wouldn't be doing the job that we're supposed to do if we're leaving questions unasked and if there's things that we don't understand about budgets. And that's what this forum really is. We're charged with representing the people of Oregon in how their tax dollars are spent. And it's incumbent on us to ask about why these numbers are the numbers that they are. So I would most strongly encourage members that if they don't understand why the costs have gone up or what the increases are, that they ask. And in fact, this was one of the questions that I was going to ask Ms. McGlashan. If you take a look for this agency at the general fund component for the legislatively approved budget, you're just over $1.2 million. In the LFO recommendation, you're almost at $1.3 million. And I was curious if you could talk to us about what the components of that roll-up are. And also, with the other fund portion, we're going from $60,000 to $64,000, and I'm assuming that's more people subscribing to the publications. But I was wondering if you could just detail what those cost increases are.
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. This budget basically continues current operations of the agency. So there are no policy option packages that you have to decide on. The roll-up is primarily from PERS costs, and that's probably more than half of the cost or the increase in the cost.
And that cost is related to the new PERS assessment or to the bonds that were having to be bought to finance the debt?
Madam Chair, that would be a combination of both of those things. And the balance is probably in the cost of what we call flex benefits, health insurance costs. There's a very minor increase in salary and wages. And then the balance would be in standard inflation. And I think in the services and supplies increase, over half of it is an increase in the rent. So these are costs that are largely outside of the control of the agency.
Okay. And then in other funds, what's the increase there?
Madam Chair, that's primarily due to the increase in the support from other funds for the paralegal position, shifting more of the support for that position to other funds because of the increased revenue primarily that has generated more subscribers. And so it was an attempt to use less general fund and more other funds for this position.
Or comments? Does anyone have any questions or comments around the recommended bill amendment that changes the general fund appropriation and the other fund appropriation totals in the budget bill? I would accept a motion to amend Senate Bill 5519 to reflect the LFO recommendation.
So made.
I have a motion. Do I have discussion of the motion? Do I have anyone objecting to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Ms. McGlashan, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'll turn that memo over, you'll see that there's an item for performance measures, and attached to the back of your packet is a report. It's two-sided. And it's entitled Legislatively Adopted Performance Measures 2005-07. And the subcommittee didn't have any recommended changes to these performance measures or the targets. And if you would just like to take a couple of minutes to review the 06 and 07 targets to refresh your memory and make sure you're still comfortable with those.
So my memory is this organization is dramatically include the backlog of cases that are coming in on time.
Senator Bates, that's absolutely
correct.
Yes. And then if you'll turn that report over, you'll see there actually is a new performance measure, and this is one that is being given to all agencies. I believe it was worked on during the interim by the Department of Administrative Services to get a standard performance measure for all agencies and pertaining to customer satisfaction. And you'll see that there aren't any targets for 0607 because data needs to be collected before reasonable and accurate targets can be set. And if you like this performance measure in addition to the other ones, then what I would recommend is that you approve this performance measure report, which will be appended to the standard budget report that comes out of the subcommittee.
Questions or comments on the performance measures?
We're still basing this upon benchmarks, Oregon benchmarks, which I have the little circle of prosperity that was put out by Oregon Shines in 1997, and I say it's broken because we're not generating revenue for exo schools, quality public services, and public facilities. We're basing all of our decisions on a broken system. Basically, that's how I look. And we've talked about it. Let's put that as a record. And so then I'll show.
Well, and I think your comment is very helpful. Yeah. And in the larger scheme of things, there needs to be some high level work done on the high level benchmarks.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would concur with Senator Nelson. I know we've talked about this. This is a source of frustration for me.
Yes.
Because I do not think many of the benchmarks are relevant any longer, and they need to be seriously rethought. I'd like to see that happen.
I agree with you. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question to the director. There's a lot of negotiations going on right now among a whole bunch of people about Measure 37 and land use. How much have you been involved, invited, consulted? Are you in those? Have they called you? I'd imagine you have a great amount of knowledge, you and the small number of folks that work with you on land use. Has anyone consulted or inquired with you about what we should or shouldn't do? Or
Chair, Representative Schaffler, the short answer is we've not been consulted at all.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I can go further and explain why that might be. I won't do it unless you want to.
That's okay.
Members, I think that the issues that have been discussed around performance measures have been very good ones and points that should be raised. The work that we did in the interim in the Joint Legislative Audit Committee around performance measures was very much what the points are that Representative Krupp and Senator Nelson have raised. And it's almost like there needs to be three separate sets of performance measures. We need some very distinct measures so that we can judge how agencies are performing within certain programs. And agency directors need probably some of these measures, but certainly some other measures to manage the agency against. And the people of the state of Oregon need probably a third set of measures to be able to judge from their perspective whether state government is working efficiently and transparently. And I think it's that third set of measures that are the ones that are really elusive right now. So hopefully the process will move in that direction.
Okay, just kind of just make a comment. I mean, what I see is, I mean, this is the circle of prosperity is based upon all these things. And it starts out with a clean and appealing environment, a talented workforce, a responsive public services is supposed to add up to all these things, and it doesn't. What we're really missing this thing is opportunities for Oregonians. That's the whole key. And it seems to me that all of our state agencies, we're starting with a premise. I mean, we want to get to a clean, appealing environment, but I think we have to start with opportunities for Oregon first and go around and try it that way. So, I mean, that's my frustration with this thing, is we're making these decisions based upon some false premises. And it's like, well, okay, I guess I can do that. I'm just going to continue to pound that drum, you know.
Well, so I think that's a valid point.
So just shut up.
Okay, well, with that, does anyone...
just one last comment. And you said that goal five would be one that each agency is going to have in the future.
That's correct.
I would first say I wouldn't want this applied to my office, thank you. We would not do well. But we're working on it.
Well, what I understand.
But I don't see you there for handwriting.
Yeah, maybe worse. But I think it's a very, I mean, somebody did some thinking here. It's very, I think, a very pertinent key performance measure. And the only thing I'd add to it is a caveat for LFO probably. How this information is gathered is a key. We've done this in other businesses at the hospital, and some of our, I'll use the word agencies because you already have agencies, but some of our offices were very good at gathering information this in such a way they look great until you actually call a few people up and said, how'd that go? And it didn't go the way they had gathered the information. So the caveat is, you know, unbiased, representative number of people being asked, how'd it go for you?
And Senator Bates, that's a discussion that we have often in the meetings that the co-chairs have, the need to have an audit function behind the data so that you can check and make sure that you're not just getting what makes you look good, that you're actually getting things that do make sense with data that is sound data.
That really is a key performance measure. That's where we're going is interact with an agency and how'd it go? You know, so. Good thinking here.
I would accept a motion to adopt the performance measures as they've been amended.
Amen.
I have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And then, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the final action today would be to make a final motion, which is that the Natural Resources Subcommittee move the bill to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due process amended recommendation. It wouldn't go to the full, actually, for this agenda until there, and my understanding is until there are more bills so that there can be a larger agenda. So maybe sometime before it actually gets to full Ways and Means, so it would just sit.
So I would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 5519 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. And I would ask Senator Shields, would you consent to carry this bill in the full committee?
Not on the full committee.
You're not on the full committee?
No.
Okay, then, Senator Nelson, you're next in line. And do we need to teach more carriers at this point, too?
It would be helpful.
Yeah. Senator Nelson, would you consent to carry it on the Senate floor?
Absolutely.
And Representative Shelton, would you consent to carry this bill on the House floor?
Absolutely, Chair.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
Madam Chair, just because you're not on the full committee doesn't mean later I couldn't carry something on the Senate floor, right?
I'll remember that.
Just wanted to toss that in. I didn't want to feel too disinterested.
We can't leave you out of this process.
Oh, you won't. Don't worry.
You might well have to before ask Bill Conjure nasty questions, so we wouldn't want to leave you out.
And I will defer them all to you, Senator.
I'll be absent that day.
Ms. McGlashan has a couple of announcements.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to remind the subcommittee members that tomorrow Department of Energy will be before you for its Phase 2 public hearing and a possible work session. So your attendance is requested strong.
And timely.
And timely.
Madam Chair, do we have a week schedule?
Yes, we did get one last Friday.
Okay, well, I wasn't here.
Okay,
I'm sick,
we'll
so
make sure.
I'll make sure that I. It's, yeah. I'm sure it's in my office.
Yeah, but okay. if you cannot find it or your staff can't find it, please let me know and I'll get another one to you right away.
Thank you, Madam Chair, getting new books from the agency.
That's correct.
Only one to get here tomorrow.
Madam Chair and Representative Krieger, I believe that for the ones that are up soon, you probably will get them when you come in the room just because there's not time to get them to your offices. But I think the intention is to get them to you at least a week ahead of time for the larger agencies so they have a little bit more time to get those from the agencies.
Questions, comments?
Do we have any more potential work sessions this week?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, after Department of Energy, yes, you possibly will have a work session on the Oregon State Marine Board. Probably, if that occurs, it'd probably be Thursday.
I just have to have a chance to confer with Co-Chair Schrader about any more work sessions. Okay, so make sure we're on the same page. Don't want things going amiss.
I do urge you to do that, but I am assured that we are on the same page. You're talking in terms of moving them to the full committee? Yeah.
And what's in those? I mean, discussion of fee schedules, discussion of fund monies and budgets, you know, very pertinent discussions for our caucus.
Well, and I urge you also to bring those issues forward in the subcommittee so that the committee members can discuss.
Make sure we're on the same page. Okay.
Okay, no further business before the committee. This meeting is adjourned.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.